Harper Audio presents The Language of Life, DNA and the Revolution in Personalized Medicine by Francis S. Collins. Read by Gregory Itzen. Introduction. We're not in Kansas anymore. The tearful young man was on the phone with his uncle. My mother is dying. She's in a coma, and I don't think she'll make it through the night. Surrounded by the drone of whirring centrifuges and students' conversation about the previous night's lab party, Dr. Robert James moved to a quiet spot where he could speak privately to his distraught nephew. "I'm so sorry, Brad," he said. "Your mother truly fought a valiant battle against ovarian cancer, and she rallied so many times when it seemed that all was lost. But it sounds as if this is really the end. What can I do to help?" "Well," said his nephew, "my sister and I have been worrying about whether her cancer might be hereditary, given all of the other women on her mother's side who suffered from breast cancer or ovarian cancer. You once told us that someday there might be a test to determine whether one or both of us had inherited her cancer risk. If that's true, is it too late to pursue this?" Dr. James explained how to proceed. A blood sample from his dying sister-in-law was shipped to Dr. James' lab the next day, DNA was prepared, and the sample was carefully stored in the freezer. He thought it was unlikely this would ever be useful, but at least it was something to do. 5 years later, Brad's sister Catherine contacted Dr. James, explaining that she had been reading articles in the popular press about the discovery of genes involved in hereditary breast and ovarian cancer. Catherine had been having yearly mammograms even though she was only in her 30s, but she was particularly concerned that there were no good screening tests available for detecting early ovarian cancer. Her mother had originally been diagnosed with this cancer at 52, and Catherine thought every day about her own potential for developing it. Dr. James confirmed that the discovery of genes known as BRCA1 and BRCA2 might well make it possible to be more precise about the risk of cancer in the family, if it turned out that Catherine's mother carried a mutation in one of these genes. Concerned about the risk of losing her health insurance if she tested positive, Catherine wanted to know whether there was some other way to get the information. Her uncle told her about a clinical research study in a nearby city that allowed testing under an assumed name, and Catherine decided to proceed. After genetic counseling about the risks of knowing or not knowing this information, Catherine requested that the DNA sample on her mother, carefully stored for several years in the freezer in Dr. James' laboratory, be forwarded to a testing facility. A few weeks later, Catherine called Dr. James to report that a significant BRCA1 mutation had been found in her mother's DNA. Catherine faced a 50% risk of having inherited that misspelling, in which case her lifetime risk of breast cancer would be approximately 80%, and that of ovarian cancer, about 50%. Catherine was deeply concerned about herself, but even more so about her 6-year-old daughter. She spent 2 weeks waiting for her own results, and it seemed like an eternity. She tried to imagine what she would do with a positive result. Would she approach a surgeon about removing her ovaries? Would she even contemplate removing both breasts and undergoing surgical reconstruction, as many women with mutations in BRCA1 or BRCA2 have done? What would she tell her daughter, and at what age should her daughter be tested? Some days she was certain the test would be positive. After all, everyone remarked how much she looked like her mother. On other days, she remembered that such information was irrelevant to the possibility of her carrying this specific genetic glitch, and she was more hopeful. The fateful day arrived when a phone call from the genetic counselor invited Catherine to come to the clinic to hear the results. With her heart in her mouth, she sat across the desk as the counselor opened the file and then broke into a smile. "Catherine," she said, "I have good news. You have not inherited the BRCA1 mutation carried by your mother. Your risk of breast and ovarian cancer is no greater than that of the average woman of your age, and your daughter likewise carries no special risks for these diseases." Overjoyed, Catherine called her uncle to share this happy moment, but both of them confessed to remaining uneasy about other maternal relatives in Canada and Europe, and about Catherine's brother Brad, who had chosen not to be tested. Although males with mutations in BRCA1 and BRCA2 face only a slightly increased risk of cancer of the prostate, pancreas, and male breast, their daughters may still be at high risk of breast and ovarian cancer if they've inherited the mutation. Brad's young daughter now became the remaining member of this nuclear family with a potential genetic cloud over her. Dr. James is a physician who has devoted his professional life to research on molecular genetics, so it was ironic that his own family turned out to be affected by one of the more dramatic discoveries in hereditary disease of the past decade. But then it happened again.